What is up, bosses? Since most of you are entrepreneurs out there, you probably recognize this sound. That is the sound of another sale on Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify is our newest sponsor here at Invest Like a Boss. They're a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like myself or even Sam and Johnny, all three of us have used Shopify at some point for one of our businesses. They can customize all your needs, give you a great-looking online store that brings your ideas to life, and they even have tools to manage your day-to-day and drive sales. Make your idea real with endless possibilities. I'm going to tell you all about Shopify during the break, but if you want to get a head start, just head over to shopify.com/ilab. Now, this is important, the ILAB. Make sure it's all lowercase, and you'll get a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. You can start selling on Shopify today. You just got to go to shopify.com/ILAB. That's shopify.com/ILAB. Like I said, I'll tell you more in a few minutes, but let's get this episode started.
Welcome to the Invest Like a Boss podcast.
I'm Sam Marks.
And I'm Johnny FD. We're self-made entrepreneurs who invest our own money and use modern technology to invest like a boss.
Join us each week for exclusive interviews with our network of modern investors, business owners, and multimillionaires to discover new ways to invest our hard-earned cash.
What is up, bosses? Episode 238 of the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Last week, we talked to Johnny. We did an Ask Me Anything episode. It's only right that it's Sam's turn now. I got Sam on the other end. I'm here in LA. Sam, I think you're in Barcelona, but correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm in Barcelona, Derek, and I am digesting easily one of the coolest experiences of my life.
Wait. You've had amazing experiences, Sam. This has to be like next level for you to call this like one of the best experiences of your life, because this, I can think of like 10 things just offhand that you've done that is like, holy crap.
Nothing like this one, buddy. Life-changing. I don't even know how to process it yet. I spent half the day journaling about it though.
Any guesses? Can you reveal it? You're on such a wine kick lately. Okay.
You wouldn't expect me to do this. Not totally off the category though.
Is this like a spiritual or like a physical?
Yeah. Yep. You're on the right track. I bet somebody listening has guessed it.
I don't know. I'm perplexed.
Philly Sybin.
Oh, what?
I took mushrooms last night in a proper like full-on ceremony in like a, you know, with a shaman and all that. And
I'm actually
blew my mind, bro.
That's a really good call, because I've wanted to do something like, well, have you ever heard of ayahuasca?
I have.
So I wanted to do that, and we did an iLab meetup like a month ago or so here in LA. And shout out to Preston who showed up. He actually did that. And I was like, okay, you need to tell me all about it. And he's done it like three times now. So it was the most amazing thing ever. Just give us a brief, like, what did you learn? You obviously learned something about yourself, because you've been having these inner thoughts of like, you don't know what you want in your life. And did it give any clarity?
It was more like existentialism, right? And so I've been just reading and studying and diving into as much spiritual stuff as I can the last 18 months, I would say, tons of philosophy. And, you kind of vocalize some of this stuff and people come out of the woodworks and kind of tell you their thoughts and ideas. And more than a few people have been like, have you ever taken shrooms? And I'm like, yeah, once in like Amsterdam when I was drunk, and I was like 17 with my buddies. They're like, no, like, done it properly, like blindfolded with, you know, with the,
you're blindfolded too.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. And I was kind of this guy that I've gotten to know actually through Muay Thai in Barcelona. He has like this whole spiritual thing at night where he's like a shaman. He's like a Muay Thai teacher in the day and like a shaman at night. And I've gone over to his place and I've done like breathing exercises and some of the, like, these kind of spiritual talks. well, he started doing these mushroom ceremonies, and he's been inviting me to them. And I'm like, dude, I've ended up in the hospital off THC before. Like, this mind altering stuff is just not for me. And he kind of keeps poking me about it. He's like, I really think you benefit from this. Just try it. So anyways, I bit the bullet and I was so nervous going into it. I've almost walked out multiple times. And then you take what was looked like two shots of espresso. Okay. And it's basically a mushroom cocktail.
Oh, okay.
Dude, I tell you, the anxiety, like when I swallowed it all and I'm like, there's no going back now. I'm so nervous. And then lay down. He's got the room all done up. Like the sage is burning, stars all over the sky. He's got the drums and everything. It's only like four or five people. And he's talking everyone through it. And he got the music. There was a lady there playing a harp and singing.
This doesn't sound like it's real. It sounds like a dream that you like made up. Yeah. So are you sure the lady with the harp was there?
And I told this guy, I was like, he's like, you can choose what strength you want to do. I go, hey man, like let's, whatever the minimum strength is. Let's do half of that.
Start me off slow.
Let's do half of that. And like 40 minutes into it, my mind, I'm just like, I'm so gone. Right. And it was very, very pleasant the whole way but I knew, I'm like, there's just no way he gave me half of the minimum because I was just blown away. And then sure enough, afterwards, he's like, yeah, honestly, you kind of been like some of your struggles. He's like, I gave you 50% more than the minimum.
Oh my God. See, he's like,
I took the exact same amount as you. And I was watching you the whole time to make sure
and he's like, I'm used to this much. So
he's like, dude, he's like, I was watching you the whole time. And he's like, I've never seen you smile. Like in all the times we've hung out, I've never seen you smile that much. And like collectively.
And well, what? You're in a really good mood now too. So maybe you still got some lasting effects of it. Are you going to try it again?
This was I can't even put it into words. I really can't put it into words, that experience and how humbling it was. And I think just because I was so nervous going into it, that whatever it was that was speaking to you through it, it's like, I mean, it's the most spiritual experience I can ever imagine having times 10. It just, everything I could have imagined getting out of it, like it was way beyond that. It like tied in so much of the philosophy and the things that I wanted to believe in, but I just like, there's no evidence or proof to it, but like whatever was talking to me in it was so fun and playful and worry free. It's still like, it's mind blowing. And I've heard the only reason I really tried it was this guy who's actually a option trader, Matt Buckley. He's an ex Navy pilot, and he and a bunch of the guys, a lot of them have PTSD, and they found therapy through this. And he's doing a documentary about like how it just like saved lives, changes their lives. And now the whole military is like supposedly getting behind psilocybin and stuff as like a healing aid. And he did a documentary on like how it's just transformed his life. And I'm like, well, I'll give it a shot,
Right.
And I like everything I've seen about it was incredible. So I don't know, I think once you digest it more, like we might have to do an episode on it because I think this just has incredible opportunity and potential to help people, even people that are feeling well, feel better, but certainly people that are battling some type of midlife crisis or, concern or depression or they're stuck. I think this has the opportunity to bring a lot of clarity.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Cool. And I think even here in the US, I think the only state that allows it is Oregon, but I know people will like go up there and make special trips. And like, I've heard like amazing things. And there's even, this is kind of reminding me of like the cannabis stocks, maybe like 10 years ago. Now there's some like stocks that are doing this thing. So it'd be good to talk about an episode on this and the potential of it.
Yeah. I would just say like, I've talked to a couple of people today that have done it before. And most people are like, yeah, I've done it, out with buddies, like at a bar drinking or something. Like that experience would be nothing compared to doing it blindfolded in the right environment with the right music, because whatever's playing in your head dances to the music. And as soon as you open your eyes, you take the blindfold off, open your eyes, it cuts straight through it. So if you were just to be going about your day with your eyes open, bar hopping or hanging out with friends. I don't think they're, it would be a totally different experience than being blindfolded and just having this theater of animation play through your brain. It's pretty incredible. That was my experience anyways.
Yeah. A little different if you're at the dive bar with your buddies and Cardi B starts banging in the background.
Nicki Minaj starts rapping.
Right. So I'm actually glad you brought this up because I wanted to bring something up too. So your mind went to, let's say, a parallel universe. Well, my body is now in a parallel universe because guess what I did this week?
Oh, no. Parallel universe, your body?
It's called back to the last episode we recorded together. We did an update on our metaverse portfolio.
And your body is in a different universe. I got no idea. Only thing from the metaverse episode is just that you're down 50% and you're buying still true. Matterport stock.
That's still true. So I had to make some money. So I actually got I get these random casting calls sometimes just for fun. And they said they need like 3D sculptures or like people to be in this 3D metaverse. And they wouldn't say who it was for, but I was like, oh, whatever. That sounds fun. And they're like, oh, it only takes like an hour. I'm like, okay. I signed up and then you got to sign the contract, of course. And in the contract, the company has to reveal who they are. I'm sure I can say it now. Who cares? But it's for, it was for Facebook. So
no way.
Yeah.
My gosh. So cool.
I am officially an avatar in Facebook's like testing metaverse.
Dude, this is awesome.
I want to see it so bad. They said they're going to use it in like their marketing and their pitches and their conferences. So I was like, I'm excited to see it. But yeah, I'm officially like a character in Facebook's testing metaverse.
Man, as you get, will they release more information to you as?
I think so. I'm sure it's months or years down the line, but it's basically they just do like a 3D camera thing of like your whole body and then like facial naked? And have you do naked? Stuff. No, I was had some clothes on. There's two different versions, but yeah. Some clothes.
Yeah.
But it was an experience. So I was just like, I wonder who this is for. And then when it came through and it said, you know, Meta and Facebook for their whatever it was called, I was like, oh, that's really cool. I'm officially part of the metaverse now.
Have you seen your avatar yet?
I haven't. They show me like the video they recorded, but it hasn't been like converted to an avatar yet. So
this is actually some technology that I'm interested in. I haven't seen it yet. It's like where, when metaverse becomes something, you imagine you just be able to go to some place in every city and like you stand in like what looks like a sunbed and all of a sudden like boom, you got like a perfect avatar and you just like just go shopping for it.
So you're thinking of like the Matrix now and they're just laying in those like tubes of goo and then you're in another world.
Yeah, well there's got to be a better way to create an avatar than just like sending a photo to somebody, because I've done these body scans before for like gyms and they do like it's for like a fat analysis, right?
Yeah, that would make sense.
I mean, this was like 5 years ago and it's like, damn, that's a perfect, whatever you call it, of me, digital rendering. So you'd think that that would be kind of the avatar technology.
Yeah, they said they wanted like, I had to do all kinds of crazy moves and stuff and they want the computer to learn like real human movement or something. I don't know. I didn't really understand it, but I just thought it was cool. So I'm physically in the metaverse.
Cool, that's a really cool update, actually. I have a lot of questions about that. Once you get more information, it'd be cool to dive into it more.
Yeah, I think I'll find out more soon. We'll definitely get back on that. And obviously the metaverse is going to be a continuing theme because we both have a lot invested into it.
Doesn't Facebook have like 50,000 employees? Don't they have?
I know, right? Just use your own people. That's what I thought.
I know that makes me kind of like skeptical. Like, why do they want you? And like, do you really want to sign up to it if their own employees don't want to do it?
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. Couldn't you just send out like a corporate email and like force people to do it? And like,
do they really need a casting call? I mean,
yeah,
you're going to be in like some like,
well, I had to pretty much sign my life away so they could use it for whatever. I guess.
If something happens to you in the metaverse, does it happen to you in the real life?
Oh, God. I mean, okay. I wouldn't put it past them. They could do anything, basically.
Zuck's doing some weird stuff to Derek right now.
If my mic and my video cuts off at some point, I'm gone.
super creepy.
All right. Why don't we get into the questions from other people? So
this is we're gonna split it. Let's split it in two. Let's kick it off with the investing questions, and then we'll talk about lifestyle in the second half. So first up, I'm glad this question was on there too, because I just saw an article about this last night. I'm sure you know more about it. Mark from Patreon, let's start with his question. He says, Sam, do you have any update on your Mt. Gox Bitcoin? What percentage of your net worth is in Bitcoin, and why not more or less? I know you've read the Bitcoin Standard and understand it at least fairly well. Let's start off with the Mt. Gox part, and then he has a little bit more questions about Bitcoin that I think is really interesting. But I read an article last night that the Mt. Gox settlement is coming soon, and they're kind of worried that once they get dispersed, everybody's going to dump their Bitcoin, and it's going to crash Bitcoin even further. I don't know what you've heard, Sam, about any update on that.
It's perfect timing, because I was thinking about this about a week ago. Like, these sons of bitches just keep holding the Bitcoin. Like, how long has it been? 2013. So
what if they dropped it to you last November? That would have been ideal.
Almost 10 years. Yeah. Well, I think what may have happened is, you know, I'm pretty passive about this whole thing, but it's been 10 years. You know, people, a lot of those Bitcoin holders, not a lot, but I'm sure many of them have died.
Sure.
We're entering a recession. If people had gotten the Bitcoin out 6 months ago, you know, they'd be crushing it right now. We're going into a recession. So people really need money. And like, there's just no movement on this stuff ever. So I'm sure they've just gotten a ridiculous amount of hate mail. And of course, the longer that they hold it, keep this trust open and this process open, they're just making administration fees and stuff. So I think they probably got a lot of pressure dialed up on them in the last 6 months. And just 2 days ago, I got an email saying that they're now accepting payment information for the resettlement. So
do you know if you're going to get
right now?
So, well, why don't you update the audience how much Bitcoin you had invested with them, how much you're expected to get back, or are they paying in Bitcoin, or is it dollars, or what? Do you know what they're paying in?
My understanding is you can do both. You can ask to be paid in Bitcoin or cash. I had 24 coins in Mt. Gox, and I believe I'm getting something back like 4.
Ooh, I thought you were going to get about half. That's a lot less.
I think it's like less than 20% or something.
So that 24 Bitcoins today at 21,000 a coin would be about $500,000.
Yeah.
And you're going to get
about like 70,000 or something.
Oh, at its peak.
Yeah. Oof.
Yeah. I think 67,
24,
$1.6 million. Yeah. 67,000 times 24 coins, right?
Yeah. So that's cool. I mean, I don't
big baller, Sam. Is that it? Just 1.6?
At some point, I was like, I have like almost 5 million in Bitcoin.
I thought you had more coins than that.
Yeah, well, I have other coins, but that's, yeah. So
can you reveal? Mark wants to know how much, what percentage of your portfolio is just Bitcoin?
I think I have like 10 in total or something like that.
So pretty minimal percentage wise. I mean, less than 1%. Yeah.
Well, no. At its peak was like, at a peak, that's like what? 10 times 60, 70. That's 700,000 or something. But yeah, now it's like, if it's a couple hundred thousand, it's pretty minimal. I think onto his second point, I think Bitcoin, I just got into this with like tax reporting again. It's just such a mess to keep track of this stuff if you actually trade it. But I still think Bitcoin at like where it's at now, 20,000 is a pretty decent investment. But I'm not putting any more in crypto right now.
Stopped trading it too, because the taxes were a mess, because you got to keep track of it yourself. And yeah. I've been buying some still, but I haven't been selling. So just because that fact of at the end of the year, my accountant's like, well, do you have all the records for it? I'm like,
There's the storage of it. I have some on like a hard drive wallet that's in a safe. I have some in a software wallet. I have some in Coinbase. And then like, you know, when the market crashed, there's rumors that Coinbase might go bankrupt. And if you have coin in Coinbase, you might lose it. And it's like,
and the CEO actually said that in their quarterly earnings. He said, if the company goes bankrupt, we can't guarantee you'll get your coins back. But then he was like, oh, well, there's no chance of bankruptcy anytime soon. I'm like, well, why would you say that then and freak people out?
Probably just like public company compliance of some sort. But yeah, it's not worth it for me to play with anymore. Like I have a sizable allocation. I have Ethereum and some other coins and stuff, but it's too messy to think about.
Yeah. So I'm still buying Bitcoin and Ether, but none of the other crap altcoins anymore. But Saifedean Ammous's episode that we had with him really kind of reminded me that to maybe stick it out, because, you know, Bitcoin's been around for what, like almost 15 years or so, maybe 20.
Yeah.
And it's gone through this 10 times. And every time it's the end of Bitcoin and it always comes back. And he had a really good tweet that Mark sent over. I don't know if you saw that, Sam. Saifedean's tweet, maybe like a month ago before this recording, he said, even after this huge crash, Bitcoin still beats all pretenders for long-term savings. If you spent the last 5 years putting $100 away a month, here's what you would have today. If you invested that $100 a month in Bitcoin, you'd have $29,000. If you just did it in the S&P, you'd have $7,000. If you did it in the Dow, you'd also have $7,000. In gold, you have $7,000. And if you did it in a PIMCO bond ETF, you'd have like $5,000. So Bitcoin still outperformed over four times any of those other four. What do you think about that?
Well, that's getting in Bitcoin pretty early still. And there's a lot of people who have lost money in Bitcoin. So that's not talking about everybody, but it's not like Bitcoin's more speculative than the metaverse stocks or small caps tech stocks. So I think the narrative still continues to be the same ever since we started talking about crypto. It's like investing in the top few big ones. We've never really bought altcoins. I think I bought a little bit of like Axis Infinity and Litecoin to kind of play with, but it's very alluring. It's still very alluring because what's going to happen is the market starts to recover. Crypto is going to recover along with it. People are going to start seeing it go back up and realize there's a chance for big gains again. And I think the cycle will continue. I think you'll just have these big pops and these big drops. Everyone's got a friend with a story that knows somebody that's made millions in some crazy coin, right? I met a guy in Samui that I've known for a while, and he was doing really like he's got a new house on the beach there and all this stuff. It turns out he made 15 million in Shibu or whatever.
Shiba Inu. Yeah. I had a friend that made like, I think he made like 100 grand off it. So
100 grand. This guy made 15 million off like $2,000 investment.
Crazy. I'm glad you brought up Axie Infinity too. Did you see what I posted in the Boss Lounge yesterday?
No. What is it?
So hackers got some employee that some engineer at Axie Infinity to apply for this job, saying some amazing job that he was into, and give away like all his personal information. So they were able to hack into this guy's whatever credentials and stole $690 million worth of Axie Infinity.
My gosh, man.
So we can write that one off, I think.
And I know there's a lot of listeners that love crypto, but honestly, I've really liked this crypto crash. There's just so much shit that just needs to wash out.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but like there's just so much slime in the crypto industry. And there's good people and there's good projects, but there's just so much shit. And like, and it's the same with small, it's just, and I'm not, just to make it more of a level playing field. It's kind of the same with startups.
Yeah.
Not to as significant of a degree, but there's a ton of startups that just shouldn't be in business. And like, and there needs to be a washout, but I'm actually enjoying this crypto washout to a degree, even though, you know, on paper it's probably lost $500,000 or something.
It's the same with everything. When sectors get out of control, you need a correction. Like look back at 2008 when real estate was insane and everybody was getting a mortgage who couldn't afford a mortgage. And there's always bad practices going on, and we need a correction to filter out all the crap. So it sucks if you got caught up in the tidal wave, but it needs to happen. Speaking of, why don't we get to, like, Eugene and Nick had really similar questions that Johnny and I have touched on an episode and we talked about it last week too, but we haven't heard from you, Sam. Like, what are your thoughts on this downturn, and have your strategies changed, or you're sticking to your plan?
The only investing I'm doing right now is still in wine, which is, I've grown pretty considerably this quarter.
Which we've learned is pretty recession proof.
Yeah. My wine allocation now is more than my crypto allocation.
Whoa.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, we've talked about it quite a bit, but I'm putting my money where my mouth is, and I just invested in like another kind of fund to try out a different model than Colt Wines. But I think that's a great one, or anything like any tangible collectibles is a good one. Also startups. It's a bit risky to invest in startups right now because there's not as much capital going into them, but for that same reason, you can get much better deals. VCs aren't preying on as many startups with as much loose money. So I've reinvested in quite a few startups, maybe three startups in the last few months. But other than that, I'm not doing a lot of investing. I mean, you look at the stock market and it's historically it'd probably be a great time to invest. But if you look at the major indexes down like 20%, at least like the NASDAQ, it's like, all right, you could put a lot of money into the NASDAQ ETF, and you can realistically believe that you're going to get a 20% increase whenever the market recovers. But it's like, is now the time you want to take a shot to make 20%?
Sure. That makes sense.
You don't know how long it's going to stay down. You don't know if it's going to get worse. It's like, do you want to put a lot of free cash into the market to get a 20% increase? And for me, it's like, no, I'd rather keep the cash.
Yeah.
Or I'd rather wait and see if things get worse and find a real opportunity. And so that's kind of my plan.
So speaking of startups, I actually just opened up an account with Sweater. Do you remember them? They're on episode 203, yeah. The fund for venture capital that's open to non-accredited as well. So far, so good. Nothing really to report. You know, it's a brand new fund. It just got SEC approval, but kind of exciting because they're the first ones that had a fund open to non-accredited. So I'm excited. I think they've invested in like five businesses so far, and it's pretty cool. They keep you updated on what they're working on and what they're looking into. So pretty cool thing there. And it's got a low threshold to get in. I think the minimum investment is like $1,000.
Yeah. Did you put money into it or just open the account?
Nope. I did put money into it too. So yeah. So far I think the share price at opening, which was like in April or May, was $20 a share, and it's at like 20.02 or something. It's super early, but you know,
they released deal information, like the terms and stuff that you invested in these companies on?
I don't know that they get that deep. I just kind of read the description on the companies and why they invested into it. I can't speak specifically. They might've put specifics. I didn't look too deep into it, I guess, but they definitely say what the company is, why they're interested in it, and what potential they see in it.
Yeah. I like it. I think it's a good way to invest a small amount of money into a bunch of different startups and kind of learn the strategies and complexities of startup investing.
Yeah. It's a small amount I put in there. It's just, I want to learn more about it. It's kind of like your wine thing. Like I just want to learn more about it before I get more, and then I can feel more comfortable to maybe do some of these bigger deals like you get into.
Yeah. We'll have to have him back on to talk about kind of the fund and the portfolio now that there's actually, cause I think when we had him on last time, they hadn't invested in any deals yet.
No, they were waiting on SEC approval. I think it was it was a few months out. So yeah, now they're running and going. So it'd be good to have them back. Speaking of wine, there was a wine question here for you. Mm-hmm. Sam from Alex Harrison, who was on the mastermind call. That's right. You had to dip a little early on the mastermind call. So he wanted to ask you this. So
all right.
Glad you're here. He had asked, how confident are you in the accuracy of the value of your wines and their future projected prices? So how do you know when they tell you this bottle's worth $300 that it actually is?
The prices of the wine is all based on some live data feed that takes into, that's like based off a live market of wine sales. So I think it's like LiveX or
the LiveX. I think I get wine emails now. Thanks to you, Sam.
Why do you get wine emails?
Because I've been reaching out to guests for wine and now they put me on their email list.
No, we don't want to be on your podcast, but we'll blast you with some emails. Yeah. No, I think the stated value, like in my actual account, and this is an interesting one too, because now I'm investing with a few different wine companies. And I really think like what Cult Wines is doing is, I mean, they're changing the game for sure. Because the other ways of doing it, the old way of doing it, where it's like give money to a wine merchant or a wine broker, and like they send you a PDF that says you own these wines, you're not really sure where they are, you don't really have live pricing on them, and you're not sure where the custody is and all that stuff. It's like, and it's kind of like on one person. And if that person dies or like runs off, like where, what do you do with the wines type of thing?
Yeah.
But the experience of Cult Wines is just totally different. Like, I don't know how anyone else is going to play the game next to them, but Yeah, I think in terms of the value of the wines, 100% confidence in that. The only thing I haven't done yet is try to sell wines or take stock, but I'm planning to do that pretty quickly. So I can share that once that's done. I'm just going to say hey, sell a couple of cases of that and send me a case of this. And then the projected price, I mean, look, I think I'm very bullish on the asset class, and it's beat the S&P 500 over any like 10-year period ever.
And these wineries have been around for hundreds of years, so they have historical data on the increases of these prices.
Yeah. And the supply and demand numbers are probably the best of any asset class that I've checked into. Shrinking supply, demand growing, prices are going up even in this market. There's almost zero volatility over the course of 30 years, 20 years, 10 years, almost zero volatility. So I love it.
Yeah, I like it. There's more people in the world, and there's no more land to put to make wine. So I think supply and demand just speaks for itself right there.
Yeah. Well, there's it's difficult to make fine wine, and it takes years. It's like you can't just go to Belgium because it's hotter now and like plant vineyards, and within 5 years you're gonna find really good wine. It takes a lot of time and process to make fine wine. So,
and even if the economy looks bad, you know, for us, the rest of the world overall is getting richer. So people want nicer things. They want to drink better wine.
Yeah.
I think it's a good play.
And it doesn't really matter what happens to the middle class. It's like, as long as the rich are rich, as long as the 1% have money to blow, that's all you need is the 1% to have some sort of interest in fine wine. And then you have a lot of people in the middle class that are like, once a year, I'm going to buy $1,000 bottle of wine type of thing.
Yeah, for sure.
$500 bottle of wine, right? But it's like the 1% that are like every month they're drinking $30,000 worth of wine type of
thing. What's that like, Sam?
Never done it. I have aspirations, Derek.
Let's move on to another question that I know you can speak to. James Everett Taylor from Facebook asks, what are your thoughts about buying land in Thailand? I'm looking at some, I said this wrong last time too with Johnny. Kopangin?
Yeah. I haven't even seen the question. I have an idea of what you're trying to say.
I'm Kophangan. And he says it's a good hedge against inflation. I asked Johnny about this too, and I think Johnny said foreigners can't buy land in Thailand, just condos, which I know you have a couple of condos. What do you think about buying land or any real estate in Thailand?
Yeah, it's a very interesting one. Well, there's one of Marco, one of our listeners from Italy, was thinking about this too and reached out to me, and I gave him my thoughts. Right now, things are cheap in Thailand, and it's because there's a couple of reasons. One is it's for foreigners, it's a cash market. So like, for instance, Derek, if you want to buy a place in Thailand, you can't get a mortgage from it. Like you're not going to get a loan from,
I can't even get a mortgage in the US. So it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not going to get a loan from a US bank, and no bank in Thailand is going to give you a loan. So all the land and condos that are owned in Thailand by foreigners, it's all cash. They also, Thailand government also just instilled a tax, property tax. And this was like one of the key benefits for owning property there. It's like the carry cost was like zero.
Right.
Just this year they added a property tax. So I just paid $500 for two condos in Chiang Mai.
Is that an annual tax, I assume too?
Annual. Yeah. So that's $250 a unit, which is not super expensive, but it's not free, right?
Yeah, if you go from free to 500, that's a big jump.
Free, and those are like small, not expensive places too. So, you know, and you know what's going to happen too? Like they're gonna make so much money this year. The government's going to make so much money this year. Go, oh my god, this is like amazing.
Let's bump that up.
Collecting all this tax from foreigners, like so easy. Let's just bump that up. You know, percentage each year, type of thing.
Pretty much a guarantee. Taxes will never go down. They can only go up.
Yeah. My advice if you're going to buy in Thailand, from my experience, the South is more risky. So the islands are more risky. There's more mafia there. You've heard of quite a few deals there going bad, including one that I was in pre-construction. Had another buddy who bought a condo there, paid like $50,000 up front and just got zero back, never heard from him again, tried to do court action, couldn't get anywhere with it. if you're going to buy a place, don't buy pre-construction. It's way too risky. That's where I got in trouble on my deal. And you hear about them going bad all the time. They don't get finished. The developers use the money to do something else with it. And it's like, it could get caught up in court forever. You can buy land, but you have to use a organization or a corporation if you're American.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's the same if you're any other type of foreigner. And that can get complicated, and Thai companies aren't super, super easy to maintain or just kind of to keep in custody. So I think, I think they're bad investments, but if it's a lifestyle thing for you and you want to live in it for 5 months a year and rent it out, I think it can make sense. It's pretty cheap. It's also cheap to build. If you buy land and build a place, your most expensive cost will be the land. Building a nice 3 or 4 bedroom house in Thailand costs, $150,000, you get a nice place. $200,000, you get a really nice place, So
why don't you go over what you hold in Thailand, Sam? Because yours aren't really investments, right? You just use them for your personal use.
Yeah. I mean, originally the idea was that it's like my plan B. If the world goes to crap, I can live in one, rent one, have a family member live in one. So right now I have 3 places, 1 down in Phuket and 2 in Chiang Mai. And, they're terrible investments. I don't think that I've owned them for 10 years. The property price hasn't moved. It's actually now they're probably down. Mm-hmm. You can't rent them for anything. You rent them for $400 a month or something, and it's just more headaches than it's worth. So I don't even rent them, except for the one in Phuket, which is in a resort. And it's been done for 6 years and it makes like zero money. It's like the first 2 years it didn't make money because the place was just getting started, and then COVID hit, they didn't make money. So I have it rented out as a hotel room in a resort. And
yeah,
the
last it's one of those
3 years I've lost money.
Wow.
It hasn't generated any income and I've had to pay the annual fees. So I think it's a terrible investment, but it can make sense as a lifestyle.
Well, good insights. I think James was looking at it as an investment point. So let's move on to Mark from Patreon. We've talked about this before too, but there's so much to unpack in the story. Is your SkySig business that you started. Mark wants to know, what was the day-to-day like when you were based in the UK? And then what was the day-to-day like when you were in China?
Oh man, this was the coolest chapter of my life. And it was really fast paced. If you think kind of like pure startup selling product out of the back of a car, to having, I think we had 90 employees in the UK when we sold. We also had a 400 person operation in China. The UK was like a fraternity. So I was only 25 at the time. So I was hiring everybody that was younger. It was mostly people that are just out of college, kind of 22, 24. And it was an operation office, and we didn't have that much experience broadly. It was like, no one out of college, people in college only had like what their part-time college jobs were. And then their whatever they studied. And me, I was just kind of like still, I was young and still learning everything on the fly. So we were just figuring things out, one day at a time, but it was a very high energy place. We would do every Thursday, we'd rent the pub that was below the office. We just have an open bar at the pub. Scottish people, nice. Just like
Thirsty Thursday.
So embedded in their culture, it's like a company perk. But it was a fun office, but it was still very focused on growth. And
what he wanted to know, you between industry. You and your partners, what were each, I think was there 5 of you? I think
there was
4 or 5.
In the end there was 4 shareholders, and there's only 2 of us that were active in the operations.
Oh, okay. So Mark wanted to know what each of your roles were to kind of start the business.
Yeah. Originally, the 2 of us were basically, one guy was doing kind of the online marketing, and then I was over in the UK doing all the operations. And then that worked for the first 2.5 years. And the other 3 partners also had a different business. They were running at the same time. So at one point we were doing 700 sales a day, 700 orders a day. And we only had a 3 or 4 person operation in the UK.
Wow. That's a lot.
And it was because we couldn't hire. Like we had a business in like Gibraltar and a bank in Panama, and we couldn't, you couldn't, you can't just like go to the UK and set up like a business operation. Like you can't get a lease if you don't have like a company or residency.
Sure.
You can't hire people. Right. I thought it was gonna be like, hey, we'll just go over there and like bring a bunch of cash and pay people under the table type of thing. Like it was difficult. And so we needed to hire people, but we couldn't, and we couldn't get approved for banks and payroll and stuff like this, because we just didn't have the infrastructure to do it. It took time to get that stuff set up, and we didn't have time. So
did you run into any like legal issues? So just recently here in the US, the Juul cigarettes, the vape things just got banned. Did you run into that with the British government? We're going, wait a minute, what are you guys doing?
No, it was so new, but we were waiting on that to happen every single day, which is why the business was so stressful. It's like we were playing in this gray area, like not knowing if what we're doing is going to become illegal tomorrow, or we're just going to get forget about being illegal. We're just going to get shut down. Are we going to have our product from China blocked until it can be investigated further? So it was like scary to invest in the business. But one funny story is like when we were trying to get set up, and I told you we were having these problems to hire people, and so the only thing we could do is like wire money into the country.
That's not shady.
So the reason we ended up in Scotland is like we had this fulfillment center that we ended up setting up in Scotland. And the guy, I'm like, listen, we can't hire people. Like we can't get an office space. I'm like, I'm working out of a coffee shop every day. He's like, well, just, you know, you're paying us every month. Just send us like a little bit extra money each month, and we'll give you a couple desks here. We'll hire someone on our payroll that can be like your team or whatever. So that's kind of how we got set up. That was like our first makeshift office. And then ended up setting up, have you ever seen these mall concessions?
Yeah, little like kiosks.
Go to a mall. Yeah, kiosks. So the malls were happy to take a wire. So I'm like, okay. We'll send them money.
Those are always selling weird, shady products. So this adds up that they would accept that.
and they also would allow us to demo the product in the mall.
Oh, they let you vape in the mall? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. So we set up like one of those, and then we have two employees there. Well, these things just generated a ton of cash, because getting cash was a problem, because I could only go to the ATM and get like 150 pounds a day or something from our bank in Panama.
Which does you no good. Yeah.
It's done no good. So these things generated a ton of product. So what happened is we would pay China for product. China would ship the product over, and then we'd sell the product at the kiosk for cash. So we'd be selling the product for cash. The kiosk would generate a bunch of cash each day. And we use that cash to pay the employees.
Nice.
And then, you know, and for other things, because there wasn't a lot of employees that would take cash, but some of them would. And so that worked. So then we scaled that. We'd do two concessions, three concessions, four or five concessions. All of a sudden it was like this huge cash operation, but we didn't have any place to put the cash that was left over. So every day, like me and this one guy that was like just out of college, we'd like drive around to all these kiosks, these different malls around Scotland, and we'd pick up all the cash and bring it back to my shared flat. And I'd have like 50,000 pounds worth of cash under my mattress. And I'm like, what do we do all this? And at the same time, the online business was growing pretty considerably. And we're at like 500-600 sales a day. And I'm like, this is ridiculous, man. We can't even like, everything's breaking. Literally everything is breaking.
Yeah. Like you can't keep that pace for long enough.
Yeah. And so there was like a call to help, you know, it's like a desperate plea for help. I'm like, we need an office. We got to get all this stuff set up. Like, I don't know what to do at this point. Like, I'm just keeping the lights on. And, and then the one other partner from Canada is like, all right, man, look, I'll fold what I'm doing, on this other business. Like I'll come over for 6 months. We'll run a nice place. We'll figure out the office, figure out the company. We'll get all this shit set up. And they came over and like, we started getting all these big bricks in place, and pretty much 6 months we had like an office, and we hired just super fast, like went from like three employees to like 30. And then pretty quickly had a full scale business running. But at that point, we were already we were a sizable business at that point.
That's cool that you're at like a breaking point, and that just took like one action to really kind of kick it into gear. And that you could have just folded like literally that week, probably, had it been, you know, that crazy just passed out and never. Well, that's so awesome. That we definitely got to hear more stories about SkySig. I like sprinkle in here now because you did some crazy stuff, but it paid off, obviously. I think that's where we'll end the investing side. Let's take a quick break. Obviously, iLab is also about lifestyle just as much as it is about investing. So I got a few questions for you for that from our listeners. We'll take a quick break and we'll come right back. We'll hear Sam's lifestyle portion of the podcast.
This week's sponsor of Invest Like a Boss is Shopify. Shopify is more than a store. You can connect with your customers, drive sales, manage your day-to-day, and Shopify accepts all major payment methods. They have thousands of integrations and third-party apps, from on-demand printing to accounting to advanced chatbots and so much more. You can join the over 2 million entrepreneurs that are on Shopify, making sales every 28 seconds. In fact, there's another one. So, like I said, Sam, Johnny, and myself have all personally used Shopify. It's so easy to get started. You can supercharge your knowledge, your sales, and your success. And to help you with that success, you're going to get 14 days free and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. All you got to do is go to shopify.com/ilab. That's shopify.com/ilab. Make sure that iLab is all lowercase. You can start selling on Shopify today. One more time, you just got to go to shopify.com/iLab. Get your free 14-day trial.
It's like magic, Sam. We're back. We talked about investing. It's going to be a little longer episode, but I think this is good. Let's get into lifestyle. I think this will be a little quicker, but a good question from Ian from Patreon asks, what's the most valuable/interesting thing that you've learned about yourself while doing this podcast, and how has it changed your life? iLab's been going for like, I look back, I think the first episode was like 7 years ago now. Obviously, a lot of things have changed.
Jeez, man. Good question, Ian. I think two things kind of pop out. One is recently I met a guy on a plane flying over to Asia, and turned out he wrote a book called The U Code. It's all about like who you really are. And he makes the case that it's way beyond personality type. It's something that's embedded in your genes. And for both guys and for girls, there's 7 different genotypes. And if you can figure out which one you are, you can orient your life much, much better. Cause most people don't really realize that. And that's kind of the reason that you have midlife crises and partner with people who you're not compatible with and work on things that you aren't really true to your true self. And I've thought a lot about that book in the last few months since I've met him and read it. And I think I've actually figured out a lot more like who I am, mm-hmm. and what I should be doing, which has been sort of a struggle. I've always done entrepreneur stuff, but I don't think that's actually me. I think it's a means of a kind of an escape of where I'm trying to, where I'd like to be type of thing. So yeah, I think through this, I've learned that accumulating money beyond a certain point is just like, it's such a stupid thing. It's like investing makes so much sense and is such an invaluable skill to secure your future and to grow your net wealth to a certain point. But like the endless pursuit of just more capital is so meaningless. And like beyond a certain point, it just is not going to improve the life of 90% of people. You know, I think for a certain amount of people that are just like chasing ego and or wrapped up in ego, like you can pursue money for a very long time and still get gains. But I guess what I've realized is it just creates a lot more headaches, a lot more stress, and it doesn't add value beyond a certain point. So I'm super happy for like what we've learned, and I wouldn't change anything about it. But for me at this point, like pursuit of additional capitals, there's nothing really to be gained there.
I think the biggest thing for me is being more financially better off than I was in the past is the fact that I don't owe anybody anything. That's a great feeling.
Yeah,
that I don't have bills. I don't have to pay anybody. Everything's good.
Yeah.
Beyond that, the rest is just a bonus, I think, but it's not, I'm nowhere near the level you are, but I don't see it increasing my happiness other than I don't have to wake up and go, I need to pay this bill. I owe this person this money. Yeah. I hate owing anybody anything, first of all, but knowing that I can just wake up and I don't owe anybody a dime is a great feeling.
And I think that we learn this at a young age because we've been thinking about it week in, week out. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the most valuable things of this podcast, beyond like the knowledge and the confidence to invest in the financial security. It's getting to that point quicker versus getting to that point maybe in our 50s or 60s and being like, now I want to focus on other things, or, you know, this pursuit's been great, but I realize it didn't get me, nothing really changed for me. And now I want to pursue different things. Like, no, now like we're in our late 30s and now we can pursue other things. So
I like that cool. it keeps investing and everything top of mind for us, because it might just slip away. You might just get stuck in your life and time passes and years pass, where this is like forced us every week to dive into a new topic or just catch up with each other. And I really like that part. And I like the fact that it helps other people as well. I love getting messages from people that say, you know, whatever they learned from iLab, or it's changed their life, or they just need an escape from whatever their life is to listen to us is really cool to hear. I forgot, Sam, a couple weeks ago, I jumped into an Uber. Mm-hmm. I got recognized from the podcast in there.
No.
The guy goes, killer podcast. He's like, I listen all the time. I was like, no way. That was awesome. Just weird stuff like that. It's cool to hear that, like, it's affected someone else's life. I get most of the enjoyment from the podcast from that, honestly.
I think like personal finance and relationships are two most important things that we need to know to live a good life beyond spiritual. Spiritual is a good one, but these are things you need to learn. It's not like family or something that's a given. It's like, you have to learn these things, but we get out of school. We don't know anything about personal finance. We don't know how to deal or manage relationships. Or like, so this is such an important one to learn at like a young age. I'm just, yeah, it's been a great journey. Like, we'll keep it going. But I think being in it every single week has like made me realize that once you have the confidence to manage your own finances and to invest, and also like to not sweat these down cycles. Mm-hmm. That was really cool. In our mastermind, was like, everyone was just kind of like, I'm not really thinking about it. Like, I'm sticking to my plan. I'm dollar cost averaging on the way down, but like nobody was sweating about it. And I think that was a different story than like when we did our first mastermind and like there was a correction and some people are like, whoa, I'm scrambling around.
Yep.
And that's, it's great to be able to go through these types of things at the different wealth levels of like me, you, and Johnny. And like, we're kind of cool. We're passive about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely relieved a lot of anxiety about seeing.
Actually, we laugh about it. Right? We do the metaverse one. And then we're like, we're getting killed, but like we're laughing about it. Well, it was like a different story than 10 years ago when I was investing. And
I think that's
going down. I was dying.
That speaks volume to us saying like, what would more money really do? That it's more of a game at this point. I think you and I are on the same page where we tell everybody not to buy individual stocks and we still do it.
I'm going to take a haircut on this one, but I'm going to do it anyways.
Right? It's for the adventure.
Yeah.
So that kind of leads into the next question. Now I feel really bad reading this because,
oh no,
there was a video you put in the Boss Lounge, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, that you had actually created about your bucket list poem video. Mm-hmm. I meant to watch it. I think I got busy. I was like, I put a note to watch it. I'm sorry, Sam. I haven't watched it yet. I'm going to actually write it down to watch it. I'll post it in the show notes too, if you guys want to check it out. Sam made this, obviously you can speak to it, Sam, but let me make sure I get some credit here. Daniel from Patreon asks, says, Sam, you seem to be living a really interesting life and know many interesting people. Says, I don't have a concrete question, but it'd be great if you could riff a little bit on your approach to life. He enjoyed the bucket list video and he would like to, he says, I think I saw a bit of your approach to life shown through there and others seem to like it too. If you could elaborate a little bit further on that.
Oof. Guess it's changed over the years.
Well, why don't you explain what the video was about and why you did it?
Yeah, yeah. So I created a bucket list video when I was 23 I created a bucket list when I was like 23. I don't know where I got the idea. Probably the movie Bucket List.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure that was from that. And I created this bucket list, but I was like, all right, I want to do this all before I'm 30. So I was 23 and it was a crazy list. I just kept adding to. I think the list is actually in like the About Us page of Invest Like a Boss. And I just started like chipping away at it. Every year I'd be like, all right, there's five things on this bucket list I'm going to do. Like, no excuses. Like, no matter what I'm doing, work or whatever, I'm gonna make sure I do these things. And then after I sold the company in 2013, I was kind of like, you know, in that void phase where I didn't know what to do. And I was trying to come up with new ideas and stuff. And I ended up just like taking the bucket list and writing a poem about it. It took me like, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks to write the poem. And then after the poem was written, I was like, this is actually like a pretty cool poem, like quite proud of that. And I had already started accumulating video from like doing bucket list and living it out. And so then I was just like, well, I'm just going to do the rest of this poem, all the missing pieces, and I'll video it. And then maybe like down the road, I'll make a video or something. And I had this vision of what the video would look like. And I was like, I need an actor that kind of like looks like me, but it's like, you know, an older version of myself, like 30 years older than me. And when I was down in Australia a few years ago, bartending, there's like a Scottish actor is at the bar ordering. And I started talking to him. I'm like, man, this guy would be like the perfect person. And I got his number, and like he and his son just went out to a beach one day and like filmed this scene for me. To splash.
How's that call? Like, hey, I want you to play me.
Pretty much, man. Pretty much. I was like, you know what? I just wrote this poem and I wanted to make this video and I need an actor. And I just need, you know, someone to basically do this scene and kind of read it out. And he's like, yeah, man, I'll do it. No problem. And so they filmed it. And then like, I didn't do anything with the video at all for like 2 years. And then I had this existential crisis and I'm like, I'm not going to make this stupid video, you know? And my mom like sent me the poem one day and was like, hey, you know, this is like beautiful. Like, weren't you going to make a video to it? I'm like, yeah. So I ended up just like, you know, I'll use the end of COVID as an excuse to make it. And I hired this film company out of Bangkok called Bangkok Productions. And I just wrote up the script and said, like, can you put this all together? And they put it together, man. It was like, it ended up being a huge project. Like, really took me a long time between filming the videos and stuff. But, and, you know, probably nobody will watch it or something, but it doesn't matter. It's just like it was a journey of putting it together and like reliving it all. It was super cool. So yeah, it's like, it's just something, it's like a photo album to have as like a memory. But in terms of my approach to life, man, it used to be YOLO. It used to be just hedonistic, like go do it all, experience life to the fullest. I think that like COVID kind of changed my views quite a bit. And now I'm on this new journey of exploring what else is out there, like beyond the sense, you know, the sensations and good food and good travel and good wine. It's like, there's gotta be something more. And I think that's why this experience with psilocybin last night was so magical. It was because all these different views of like the Eastern philosophies and Buddhism and reincarnation and Taoism, it really just pulled everything together in like a way I can't even describe. So that is, I guess, my new approach to life is like, keep a very good balance, maximize freedom, and then try to go explore like what else is beyond this, the day-to-day life. What if people that have been meditating and trying to see different sides of life, like instead of what's in front of you, like what's behind the scenes type of thing, what's behind the curtain. And so that's like the new pursuit. And I think based on my research, like that pursuit is sort of a lifelong one that you kind of pick up insights as you go along, and maybe there's a grand reveal at the end. Nice. That's what I'm interested in now.
I like it. Let's move on to Mark from Patreon. He has a ton of questions. We can't do them all. I asked Johnny a couple of them. I'll ask you some different ones. Oh, how about this one? This is a fun one. Sam, if you could share a meal with any four individuals living or dead, who would they be? Hopefully there's some wine there too.
Four individuals living or dead. Let's do the obvious ones. Jesus, Buddha. That would be badass.
You only got two left.
Yeah, those are kind of a quick two. Oh man, I might throw in another philosopher. Carl Jung. It's okay. Going to be boring for most people.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I'll skip this dinner, Sam.
And then maybe like a conqueror, maybe like Genghis Khan.
Oh, that'd be cool. Wild card. You need a wild card in there.
I want to know who Johnny's ancestor was.
Right?
I want to speak to Johnny's great-grandfather.
Well, this one kind of ties in. Mark had, let's see one more from Mark. He had, you were just talking about your approach and what's changed in the last 10 years. Where do you see yourself going 10 years forward?
10 years forward, I would like to be doing, my current vision right now is like the main thing that is pulling me is I want to go to Nepal and or Japan, and I want to study in the monasteries there. So Japan, I'm really interested in going and studying Zen, and in Nepal, you know, just basically Buddhism. And I really like the combination of like martial arts and philosophy. So you can also do it in like China, Shaolin Temple, but in Japan, there's obviously tons of martial arts and Zen Buddha, like Zen is a sect of Buddhism, which is like quite interesting to me because it's all about kind of you're in the day-to-day life, but it's trying to find enlightenment through the day-to-day life instead of like going and living in a cave quietly for 30 years. It's like, you know, how can we apply this in our daily life? And they also use quite a bit of humor, but some of the temples there are just like incredible. And I've always loved Japan. So I think that would be cool. And then yeah, doing the Nepal bit. And then after that, I would like to, I envision having like a farm somewhere in Asia where I just have a ton of animals, but the animals are just like free to go do whatever they want all day. They don't have to like
free range farm. I like it.
Or like give milk or whatever. Like, and the idea is like to buy animals that are like in danger, like cows that are on their way to the slaughterhouse, dogs that are, you know, hurt or injured, cows that were like, you know, in Southeast Asia, you have the water buffalo, maybe mistreated or like working or something, you know, and like just have basically like a happy farm type of thing.
Well, I know you've talked about it, Sam. Are you currently vegan or are you working towards being vegan? Because we've brought up this subject a couple times before too.
Buddy, it goes in waves. I'm no saint. Certainly eat enough meat in Spain, unfortunately. But no, when I'm in Asia, I'm almost purely vegetarian or vegan, whatever the light one is. I still eat eggs.
Yeah, so more vegetarian.
And if someone orders meat, I'll eat it, but I won't order there. And in Spain, it's like, it's whatever. it's so difficult, but yeah, I'd like to be fully vegetarian strictly for, you know, just because I think it's screwed up that we raise animals, slaughter them, but you know, I'm no saint. So
yeah, I try not to think about that part when I'm enjoying a juicy steak.
No one does. In Spain, it's jamón. It's like, you know, it's
oh, that stuff
and it's
is,
like woo! So insanely good with a glass of wine and cheese.
Love it. That and prosciutto. You can give me that all day.
I can literally live off that stuff. But
well, this question comes up.
I'm not eating it.
This question comes up a lot. And it's kind of boring. We've talked about it. It's like, why don't you have kids? But this is kind of interesting. It's kind of another spin on it from John Much asked, he said, imagine you were married and had kids today. How would your life look different?
Oh, I think that raising a kid would be an awesome experience, given like the right context. And there's a fairly good chance I will have kids in the future. But where I'm at right now, I've turned into kind of what's called I saw this word finally because I always had this view for the last couple of years, and I found the word that like identifies with it. Because I could not believe that I'm the only person that's ever had this thought. And I found myself Googling, is having children immoral? Immoral. Right? On the basis that life is kind of fucked up and you are choosing to bring someone into the world, like you're bringing them into the world. And as far as we know, they don't have a choice. It's like they're in a cloud somewhere and you just like yank them and like pull them into this world. And it's a cool an experience to raise them, but then they are the ones that have to deal with life for 80 years, and like they may not like it.
I think that's been every time period though. You could pinpoint to I don't know the 50s. There's a threat of a nuclear holocaust. There's always some kind of thing going on where you're like, this is a terrible time in the world.
It's not.
But if you look at everything, it's not. This is like exactly the best time to live.
I know. I agree.
We're not fed like, that though.
I'm not saying that like right now is so screwed up and like there's no opportunity for the future and it's the worst time ever to have a kid. Like you're right. I think all the previous times were arguably worse in different ways. I just think even like in previous generations, Anyways, here's the term, antinatalist.
Okay.
Look it up. It's basically like it's screwed up to bring people into this world because the world's like, even best case scenario, it's tough. But the worst case scenario is like pure hell. And like,
do you want me to read that? Hopefully Wiki is the proper definition. But antinatalism is the ethical view that negatively values procreation. Antinatalists argue that humans should abstain from procreation because it is morally wrong. In scholarly and literary writings, various ethical arguments have been put forth in defense of antinatalism. It's very interesting. I've never heard that term.
I didn't know this thing, because if you Google, like, is it immoral to bring kids into the world? It's like nothing.
Yeah.
There's nothing about it. But then I found this word antinatalist. I'm like, that's it. So
they're all pushing babies on us like Elon Musk. Did you see he just had two more secret kids?
Dude, he's up crazy. To nine. He's crazy.
At least he can afford them.
And you know, his whole thing is like, I'm just trying to be an example for the world, because if we stop having kids, then. Yeah, but you see, like, some of his kids don't even want to, they're going to court. They're like, we don't want
him. Yeah, I don't want anything to do with this crazy guy. Yeah, until he passes away and they want to check, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I think, I think having kids could be beautiful. I'm still open to the idea, especially after last night's experience. Like, I've kind of found a newfound. The nihilism is kind of what I got into over the last 12 months. And it's like, it's hell. It sucks. It's really bad. And you need an out of nihilism. But if you're nihilistic, then there's like really no point to have kids unless you're going to have kids strictly to benefit yourself. And then having children is a selfish decision, but they're the ones that have to live a life, you know? So I want to make sure, like, if I have kids, it's not because I want to have kids strictly because I think it'll be a good experience. I want to have kids because I think life is so amazing and so worth living that it's a total gift to bring them into the world and let them go on the journey. And like,
that's a good point.
I was kind of in the middle.
I've always kind of thought that it is kind of selfish to have kids just for the purpose of having kids, for you to have like something to do, you know.
But that's why most people have them. They're like, exactly. Oh, the relationship's kind of stale and bored. Let's have some kids. Like,
oh, that's terrible. I agree with that. I'll go antinatalist on that.
Join the party.
Well, let's
do the new green party,
right? Let's do one more. I guess on a similar note, if you had kids, I don't know that you'd be jumping around and living in multiple cities around the world. So David from Instagram asks, what's your biggest challenge living in multiple cities around the world and how are you dealing with it? Oh, this is David Swanner. He's a good friend of the show. He's been jumping around a lot around the world too. He recently retired, I believe, and he's going all over the world. So I think it's kind of a new thing for him. And you've had years of experience of it. What's the challenges of doing that?
Well, I've changed a lot recently. And like now I don't want to travel at all. Even when I go away for a weekend, all I want to do is get back to my place. Yep. Like, you know,
I just did Vegas for 4 days and I was so happy to be home. I was like, that's such an easy trip. But I was just like, the first night home, I was like, oh, this is nice.
I think what changed for me, it's probably a mixture of both timing, but it's really, I think just getting a proper house set up. Cause I've never had this in my life, and getting the Spain place finished and making it feel like a home. That's like the only place I want to be now. I mean, I love my place in Thailand. I also like my place in the States. Like all of a sudden out of this last year, now I've got three places, but before I only had the place in Thailand. And so now,
you know what, that happened to Johnny too. Remember he got his place. He got his place in Kiev and he got it all nice and set up. Obviously the war pushed him out, but he's like, I want to stay here. And now he's forced to move again. But I think that, both you guys didn't have like a real, you know, home. I guess you had a house or an apartment or whatever it was, or an Airbnb, but you never had a home.
Yeah. And then you always feel like you need to be on the move. And then when you get on the move and you don't have a home, it's like kind of exhilarating. It's fresh, new experience. But now, even if I leave for like an overnight trip, I just want to get back, man. I'll tell you. So I think my travel adventures are done. I'd still like to spend part of the year in Thailand each year, you know, maybe 4 or 5 months, and then the rest of the time here. But I don't think I'm going to be traveling much anymore. To, I guess, answer his question, what's like the biggest challenge is, looking back, it was always a feeling of not belonging somewhere. And then also just having my friends spread out everywhere.
Yeah. And that's to tough
fair,
too.
Like, I have very few friends in Spain. Like I'm kind of just like pretty much a loner here, but But my house is my castle. Like, I'm here all the time. I feel good when I'm here, got a good routine. So yeah, I think, I don't think I'm going to move around very much going forward, even for like weekend trips.
Wow. Right. Okay. I know this is an audio podcast, but you know who would be disappointed in your decision?
Did you finally get through that book?
I'm almost through it. It's getting
Mr.
better.
Jim Rogers.
Jim Rogers, who has been in every country in the world, and he's like, what, he's in his 70s now, and I think he was still going to go to China and do the whole tour there. And
yeah,
fun time.
Mr. didn't have children until he's 60. So
I know, right? And is
at 37, it's like, man, we got time,
right? Yeah, we're good.
We got time to make people are living longer.
Sam, we're going to make it to 100 easy. So yeah, if you want to go check out that episode, that was a fun episode though. 221. Sam got to interview Jim Rogers. Really Loved cool it. Interview. All right. I think that's the questions that we got. We should do this again. Maybe like a once a year thing. Lots of good stuff coming up in the podcast. We got quarterly updates soon. That snuck up on us, and lots of interesting things with this downturn. Cause I think even as of March, things were still looking okay. Things have changed quite a bit since then. So quarterly updates soon to come. You guys are doing reviews. Thank you for that. We had a little dry spell of reviews. If you get a chance, Apple Podcasts, leave a 5-star review. Write us a couple of sentences. We'll shout you out on the podcast. Spotify is huge on podcasts now. That really helps us. You can't leave an actual written review there, but if you can mark 5 stars, that's much appreciated as always. We got Patreon. We'll have another mastermind coming up soon. That's investlikeaboss.com. Just click on become a Patreon. Still $5 a month. There's inflation out there, Sam. We're still at $5 a month. We're the only thing that hasn't raised their price.
There's inflation, and we must be in a recession because our Patreon membership has gotten whacked the last few months. Inflation and recession, not good for our Patreon membership.
Honestly, the best time to be in Patreon, though. This is the time where you need the support that say things are going to be okay.
Derek's just saying this because any decrease in Patreon comes from Derek's.
My large salary gets reduced.
Now, I appreciate all the AMA questions. It was a lot of fun. And Derek, you know who we should bring on the show, actually? We should bring on that author of that book, The U-Code. I think everyone enjoy that.
The U-Code. It's on my list.
I'll reach out to him.
Awesome. Yeah, we got some other good guests coming up too. I always get these. I never want to say they're confirmed on the podcast because people confirm and then the dates change 4 times and then it either happens or it doesn't. So more to come.
Here's another one. I think you should try to do the mushrooms, but like properly, not go out and drink at a bar and do it.
No.
Find a place. Actually, I think California is really progressive with like having centers where you can go in.
I think I got to go to Oregon, but that's an easy trip. I could go up to Portland for a weekend.
I'm going to look. There's one I know in San Diego. I'm going to look it up for you.
All right.
It's like Medic or something.
I'm down. I'm 100% down.
So I think you should do it. And then we should have on a guest that talks about like the science behind it.
Yeah.
And history. And then we'll do an episode like on our experiences on it. Cause I think this is, it's
here's
awesome.
The thing though, you had such a great experience the first time. You can't live up to the hype if you do it again.
Probably not, but maybe, I don't know. I haven't asked anyone that question specifically. Like, is it diminishing returns? Maybe all you right. just got to increase your dosage.
I like it. I'm down. Let's do it. 100%. I love it. Mushroom time. All right, Sam, that's all I got. You got anything else?
That's it. Thanks, bosses. We appreciate you. We'll see you all next week.
Boom.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Like a Boss podcast. Join our mailing list at investlikeaboss.com to get exclusive access to our insider investment portfolios and our private members forum.
If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends and leave us a review in the iTunes store. It helps more than you know. See you guys next week.